If there's no further privilege of the floor for legislators, let's move on to a report from municipal officials. Maria Coles is here.
Well, the only appropriate greeting for tonight is Happy Inauguration Day, everyone. And Ithaca did its own little part yesterday morning with the unveiling of the dual designation of Dr. Martin Luther King Street and State Street. I was filled with joy to see how many people were able to attend at such an early hour and on such a cold day. And there were marches from different areas of the city which arrived at 9 o'clock for the very, very glorious event, which was not exactly free of its own problems. It probably took way too long to happen, but it did happen nonetheless, and perhaps the timing turned out to be absolutely perfect, so that we could say that Ithaca did contribute just a little bit to the incredible day that followed. And I saw some of you there yesterday, and that was a pleasure. On to less edifying subjects. You have probably heard about the controversy between the town of Ithaca and the city of Ithaca regarding ownership of land occupied, rented to the Ithaca Farmers Market. I am not about to say anything about the controversy itself, but what I will tell you is that the town has no objection to the city going ahead with the IURA contract and the Ithaca Farmers Market. And that is a very happy thing, because needless to say, the Ithaca Farmers Market has many plans to make. So that is a happy resolution. I also want you to know that the city's Workforce Diversity Committee continues to do its great work for the city. So far, almost every department has reported to that committee with the plan for diversifying the department, and at a time which I hope is sooner rather than later, each of those departments will report either to one committee of Common Council or to several committees of Common Council what those plans are, because continuing to diversify the city's workforce is something that is a very important thing. In addition, you probably all know that there is a building development moratorium in College Town that is about to expire in April, and I'm here to say that having read and reread the College Town plan, I am afraid to say that, in my opinion, that College Town plan leaves far too many questions unanswered, so I am not quite sure how that will proceed, but some of the unanswered questions in that plan have to do with parking, have to do with protection of neighborhoods in the area, certainly the height of buildings that is being recommended in the plan is of serious concern to many of us. And then there are problems such as the fact that where the cars would park that would otherwise be parking in College Town will be allowed to be parked in the long term has not been answered by the plan, nor has the cost associated with that. For that matter, what the entire cost to the city for its full implementation is has also not been revealed in the plan, but I am very concerned about what that means. You might also know that the mayor, in preparation for possible hard times ahead, has implemented a hiring freeze with a vacancy review committee to review all positions that have already been approved and to make sure that those positions that are approved to be filled indeed must be filled, having some relationship to the well-being of the city as a whole, and perhaps having to do with life and safety. There's also a purchasing freeze, and that is being done out of concern not only for what the state of New York might do, but also out of concern for what the impact of the present economic conditions might be on the sales taxes that the city receives. Last year, the city received about $12 million in sales taxes, and we are not sure what that will be in 09. And that's about it for me.
Thank you, Maria. Any questions? If there's no further questions, we'll move on. Will, did you have a...
Sort of a point of order, Mike. I was just wondering where in our agenda we would put Dooley's concern and her motion, whether that would happen in resolutions to be added or new business.
Well, a motion can be made at any time.
Okay.
We'll probably start with the consent agenda, and after the consent agenda would be an appropriate time.
Okay. Thank you.
My plan was to let us get through the regular business, which has to be done.
Thank you.
We have no special presentations, so let me move on to Chair's report. I have circulated some ideas for committee assignment, committee responsibilities, not yet gotten to committee assignment ideas yet, but if people have comments on the committee responsibilities, basically configuration of how committees might look in 2009, they can certainly get back to me. I'd like to have feedback if possible by tomorrow so then we begin to have conversations about who might be assigned to certain committees. Frank did bring up an important point regarding county business being done in this period of time, and is my anticipation that as of the February 3rd meeting, as chair, I will be presenting appointments to committees and chair's appointments to liaison assignments. If anything changes before then, that would certainly start a new clock ticking for someone who would be chair at that point. I did put in your mailboxes some just basic economic indicator information. NYSAC has a new spot on their website for some economic indicator information, and Gene McFeeters from the Chamber of Commerce also has circulated an indicator which is looking optimistic for Tompkins County compared to other cities. And let's see. I think regarding the point that Dooley has raised and others have spoken to, let me just speak for a minute to that. Our new president today spoke of the confidence of the American people in their elected representatives and in their government in general. If my error on January 6th has shaken the confidence of this community in our government or in this legislative leadership, then I commit to you that I am willing to submit to revisiting the election of chair of this legislature or a vote of confidence if necessary.
Point of order, Mike.
Yes.
You're not allowed to, I don't think.
I could resign.
That's true.
That's
the way you wanted to do it.
I'm not proposing to resign tonight. I'm saying that I am willing to take that under, as one method to achieve an outcome that's definitive. It was not one method that I added to my list last Thursday, but it is a method that would be definitive. My goal is to restore public confidence in our leaders in this county in a transparent manner. So with that, I think we'll move on to... I have no chair's appointments, so we'll move on to county administrator report. Joe Mariana.
I again have a very brief report tonight. Since the legislature last met, Chairman Kaplinka-Lehrer, Martha Robertson, Patricia Carey, and I did meet with Senator Seward to talk about the state budget, its impacts on our budget, and ask for his assistance to address some of the concerns that we have. I think it was time very well spent. We met in Cortland, and this will be, again, a part of our ongoing communication with our legislative delegation. I do need to report that on the Budget and Capital Committee agenda that's been circulated for the January 26th meeting, there is an error. The error lies with my office. There's an item on there regarding the room occupancy tax and the allocation of that tax that's shown as a discussion item. The chairman had asked that be an action item. So, again, that needs to be changed, and we will circulate a revised agenda tomorrow. third of my three items. I would ask the legislature for a very brief executive session after this meeting to discuss a personnel issue. It should last only a few minutes.
Thank you, Joe. Mike Sigler, then Martha.
I was wondering how the meeting with Michael Arcuri went.
I think it went very well. Martha Robertson, Jim Dennis, myself, and your representative from Dryden.
Lansing.
Oh, I'm sorry. Ed Marks. Met with the congressman, talked about our thoughts on the federal stimulus package, but also heard from him, I think, our first real understanding of what's in the House proposal for the federal stimulus, and began to align things those two thoughts have in common. Clearly, this is going to be an unbelievable investment that will occur in the very short period of time. We talked at some length about infrastructure and things that are shovel-ready that could be supported by the stimulus package. We talked about green initiatives, and that seems to match up with what's on the federal list of priorities. Talked about a number of things in public transit, including the simple, the need for additional buses in our area to accommodate additional demand for public transportation. Interestingly, that seems to be an area that's also on the House list of targets for investment. So I think it was time very well spent in terms of both the congressman's understanding of things that are important to this community and what would help, but also to our understanding of what's starting to emerge from Washington in the way of the detailed stimulus plan.
Hey, I think Martha had a question, then Jim.
Well, I was going to ask you to report on that, too. He seemed really positive about buses.
Yeah.
So, yeah. I was struck with how he was reading from, he was sort of flipping through this fairly long document that seemed to be what their list they're working on. They'd say, oh, there's $6 million for that, there's $6 billion for that, $2 billion for that. And at the end of it, he's like, you know, it's just not enough money. Because when you think about, say, $6 billion for municipalities nationwide, this was one item, and I'm making up $6 billion, I don't know if it's the number. Nationwide, for municipal buildings to add solar panels or other renewables to, like we want to add solar panels to our health department building, great public purpose, but $6 billion doesn't go very far. So on the one hand, he's feeling very, he's really in a tug of war with himself that it's not big enough, but he's also worried that it's not going to work, and he's also especially worried about the pass-through state coffers and the issue. Right. I mean, the issue is because this very, very strong message is there aren't going to be any earmarks in this. And he pointed out that, in a sense, earmarks are more accountable. You know, here's this amount of money for this project, but that's not the way they want to do it. So having no earmarks means it's going to be relatively unrestricted streams of money that are basically going to be administered through states. So with our state's problems, we're a little worried too. So at any rate, he actually seemed like, at the end of all this positive conversation, he was really not positive where he was going to come out in terms of voting on it. So I hope we stay in touch with him. I think he was politically burned by his vote for the first stimulus package for the financial community. And I think this one's really different, and I hope he does vote for it. But that remains to be seen.
Short comment. Steve Farkas was there from Lansing and spoke about the sewer project and clearly got that point across to Congressman Arcuri. And as Martha mentioned, there is money for public work projects, but, you know, we're competing with 49 other states, and hopefully something like that could, you know, get some cash if there's cash available. But he did a good job talking about that particular project.
And Frank Proto?
Thanks, Mr. Chairman. Joe, thank you for bringing up the need for the buses. And Martha, and whoever else attended the meeting. The need, we have 16 buses that are in trouble. They're not going to fall apart tomorrow morning, but we had a budget, TCAT budget meeting yesterday, and we'll be hearing about it on Thursday at the board meeting. But the concern is that at least three of them are probably the top priority right now. The concern that TCAT has is that, and I'm speaking as vice chair of TCAT, the concern that TCAT has is it takes about 2 years between the time that you get blessed with someone saying you're getting, okay, you're in the pipeline, between all the paperwork and whatever, the process is about 2 years long. And we're doing a forecast now to determine what our need will be in order to preserve the buses we have, because now we've expanded into Schuyler and we've taken over the Tioga County routes. So I'd like, when you and I meet, I'd like to add that to the list of items, because if the congressman, and I don't want to overlook Congressman Hinchey. Congressman Hinchey has been extremely, extremely helpful to TCAT. And I think we need to not only do it at the federal level, but there's also rural money that we have not gone after yet. That's because we've expanded these rural routes. And everybody seems to like them. You know, we hit 3 million riders again. So I'd like to add that to the list, but I wanted to make sure that we didn't lose sight of the fact that it takes 2 years to get the bus. So even if he said last week when you met with him, you got it, we need to make sure that the buses we have will still be in service over the next 2 years.
And you know, the point was made at the meeting, and it was an excellent point. I think Ed may have made it, that this is the right kind of stimulus. In purchasing buses, it promotes public transportation, which is certainly a national objective. It saves energy, which is the right thing to do, but it also puts people in the domestic economy to work building buses. So it seemed to be a nice meshing of priorities, and I think that I think the congressman clearly understands that,
and I think very supportive. If I read correctly, I think he has a manufacturing plant around Utica. Wouldn't hurt, right?
Briefly, Mike Sigler.
I just think Frank meant to say that TCAT buses are the most comfortable, cheapest, and fastest way to get around the community.
Did I say that?
Underselling.
There's no more questions or comments on the County Minister's report. On to County Attorney Jonathan Wood.
Couple things. First, there's been some coverage of the Coddington Road decision, and it's a bit of a hard thing to understand, so I thought I'd try to explain the decision as well as I can. The appellate court held essentially two things. I mean, there are two issues. One was SEQR, the State Environmental Quality Review Act, and whether the county complied with that. And on that, what the court said is that the consultants that the county hired did a thorough environmental analysis, looked at everything they should, but it wasn't entirely clear that the legislature adopted that analysis. So they held against us on that issue, but it's an easily correctable error. All the legislature has to do is readopt the resolution, making clear that it was adopting the analysis that was done. But there wasn't any problem with the actual environmental analysis. The second point is on the extent of the county's right-of-way. People in the neighborhood, or some of the people who were the complainants in the case, believe that the county right-of-way should be the county's use. And the county believed that the right-of-way should be 3 rods. A rod, by the way, is 16.5 feet, so 3 rods is 49.5 feet. Because if you go in the clerk's office and trace all these properties as far as you can, you'd see all the maps show that it's 3 rods. The court agreed with the property owners and said it should be use unless the county can show how it acquired the 3 rods. The problem for the county is that the road dates back to the 1700s, long before we have any records, so we can't possibly show how we got three rods. So it ends up being that we're going to have to go by use. Now, the significance of that is simply that it makes the project or the acquiring of parcels somewhat less definite, because if it's 49.5 feet, it's 49.5 feet. If it's use is a somewhat indefinite thing. So it's a slightly more cumbersome project or procedure, but it doesn't really affect the overall project. And the way it stands, the state is probably going to do the acquiring of land anyway, to the extent we need land. So it'll mean that they'll go about it somewhat differently. Maybe it will take slightly more time. Given that we're talking about maybe a foot or so here or there on the side of the road, it wouldn't really have any significant financial impact. But it is important to understand that the rebuilding of the road is about a $9 million project. And about, of that, $8.5 million comes from the state and federal governments. Only about $500,000 would come from the county. And the basic width of the road is probably the real concern of the landowners. And the decision doesn't change that. And essentially what it comes down to is the state and federal governments believe that if it's not at the designed width, then it would not be safe, and they will not give the county the money for a road they believe to be unsafe, and that being $8.5 million of the $9 million. So while the decision affects the procedures of how we go about acquiring the land, and the state will probably do that, it really doesn't affect the project itself. And if anybody has any questions, I know it's a somewhat complicated thing to explain and to understand, and I think a lot of people, quite frankly, maybe even many of the plaintiffs in the case, don't really understand what the result of the decision is or would be. So if there aren't any questions, I'll move on to the one other thing.
There are questions. I saw Mike Sigler's hand, then Martha, then Will.
I guess mine's more of a policy question, which I guess you can't answer. And I'm just kind of wondering if maybe the committee can... I mean, how does this fit in with our broader transportation plan for the county? And if it's not an integral part, maybe we shouldn't push it. I mean, maybe this road is kind of like should be left the way it is. I know it's going to deteriorate, but...
It doesn't really work that way. I mean, the way it really works is the highway department goes out there and they test roads very frequently. And what they do is they basically do drill borings into the road, mm-hmm. and they look at the cross sections. And they keep repairing roads as long as you can. At some point, the roads break down and you can't repave them. It just doesn't work. It'll just fall apart. So when roads get to that point, you really have to rebuild them from the bottom up.
Right.
Then when you come to rebuild them, because it's so expensive, in this case $9 million or so, you really then need the state and federal government money. So it's not really a matter of can you just leave the road alone. Basically, you really can't, because the road is losing its ability to hold traffic.
It sounds like the state has blocked us from redoing the road.
No.
Well, I suppose that... No, I mean, they just have, you know, their engineers have looked at it. And, you know, there are all kinds of rules and regulations and what proper site distances should be and how, you know, various things, room for pedestrians, room for sight. And when their engineers look at it, they go by that, and you could ask them to waive certain requirements, but they won't do it if they don't believe it's safe. Mm-hmm. So basically, they're just basically following the rules, to be honest about it.
I want to remind people we do have people waiting for the regular business items, and if some of these questions can be asked of Jonathan offline, that would be great. I have Martha, then Will, then I saw Pam's hand.
So you said the state is going to be acquiring the right-of-way.
That's the current agreement. In some cases, the county does it. In other cases, the state does it. Usually the state, it takes a little longer, but for us, with our staff and things, sometimes it's really necessary.
Okay, does that mean there are other, are they going to pay for it, and is that separate from their portion, or is that comes out of the portion they're going to pay?
No, I mean the proportion it's split is the same. It's just I'm just talking about who will actually do the work.
Okay.
Will Burbank?
Thank you, Mike. John, I appreciate you calling me today to alert me that you were going to be giving the report tonight. And as you pointed out, this road is literally on the border of my the district that I represent. And as I'm sure you're very well aware, the neighborhood has been very much concerned about the county plans. I will be following this very closely, and I hope to meet with you and learn more about it. But I hope that the county can, in the future, be more responsive than what I think we have been in terms of the concerns, and specifically in terms of the road width. Yes, there are standards. Yes, we have to do it to design, but have we truly pushed as much as we possibly could to keep that road as narrow as possible? And I'm going to be very, very interested in seeing if we can somewhat get better relations in the neighborhood.
Okay. I will, you know, and we'll talk about it obviously in more detail. I will say that the Highway Department did submit a request to the state and federal government asking it to be more narrow than they would approve, and they said no.
Pam McAsey.
Well, I just wanted to respond to Mike and to what Jonathan has just said, because I think that one of the problems that we have is that the state has developed these guidelines for roads that are just, they basically take all the character out of roads. They make them straight and wide and faster for cars. And the fact that this is a very old road, that this is a road from 1700s, doesn't seem to mean much. That you have houses along that road that have been there for a very long time, and that this is a linear neighborhood doesn't seem to make much difference. And so it's frustrating because the people who have lived out there, who bought their homes and live out there, because of what the kind of uniqueness of that road, that those kinds of things are not really taken into consideration by the state, and it is not, I think, if you would want to look at it in a lot of different ways. But anyway, it's a very frustrating kind of position because they are basically destroying sort of the history of the roads in New York State by the way that they redo them.
If there's no further comments or questions from the legislature, we'll move on to David Squires, Finance Director. Do you have another point, Jonathan?
Actually, I did have another point, but I'll send a brief email to everyone.
Okay.
It's a scheduled matter.
Okay, thanks.
Briefly, I wanted to report. I laid on your desk a sales tax report. At the last meeting, I indicated that I expected we'd collect about $1 million more than we had in the budget, and that's how we actually ended up. So I was pleased that I reported to the Budget Committee that I thought it would be a little less than that, but when the actual came in, it's $1 million, which is, you know, we'll need that. Secondly, we made progress. Previously, in December, we handed you a report on the number of properties that are exposed to foreclosure. And what you have on your desk is the current list of properties that are left after the final day to pay. We materially reduced the number from over about 66 to 18, I believe. So that's good news. And finally, before the legislature meets again, we'll be receiving bids on the financing to complete the funding for the health department building. On January 29th, we're receiving bids for $6.5 million. So hopefully we'll have another successful result. That's my report.
Thank you, David. There's no questions. I don't see any staff here to be recognized. So we'll move on to, are there any resolutions to be added or withdrawn, added to or withdrawn from the agenda? Seeing none, I will call up the consent agenda. These are resolutions not expected to be controversial, but can pass in a single vote, as well as the appointments. I'll start with the appointments. To the Youth Services Board, Bernice Yarosh and Jane Powers, to the Criminal Justice Advisory Alternatives to Incarceration Board, Julia Hughes, to the Public Information Advisory Board, J.R. Claiborne, to the Hillview Road Landfill Citizens Advisory Committee, Brian Eden, to the Local Environmental Empire Zone Administration Board, J.R. Claiborne, to the Water Resources Council, Roger Yunkin, it's not Segelkin, but Yunkin, Planning Advisory Board, John Spence, Agriculture and Farmland Protection Board, Bob Mazurek, Jamie Baker, Rachel Crispell, and Soil and Water Conservation District, Ron Updike. The resolutions on consent from Health and Human Services Committee, Resolution A, acceptance of grant from Community Health Foundation of Western and Central New York, Office for the Aging. Resolution B, accepting United Way grant for Fresh Squeeze Orange Juice Guide to Teen Services and Activities, Youth Services. On the Government Operations Committee, Resolution C, delegation of authority to authorize certain tax refunds and credits of $2,500 and under. And Resolution D.
Off.
Okay. From the Planning, Development, Environmental Quality Committee, Resolution E, urging New York State to make permanent and expand the authority of the Industrial Development Agency Civic Facility Legislation. Resolution F, Budget Adjustment Planning Department. Who would like to move the consent agenda? Frank moves it. Martha seconds. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Are there any opposed? That's unanimous, with D going back under Government Operations Committee. Because we have people waiting, we're going to move to Health and Human Services Committee. Frank Proto, Chair, for that report and then resolution.
As you know, the committee met just before this meeting this evening. Most of our business is reflected on the agenda tonight. But I would like to draw your attention to the resolution A that was on the consent agenda, the acceptance of the grant for the Community Health Foundation of Western New York. Because of the discussions that we've had around this table and because of the governor's proposed budget, this grant, as described by Lisa Holmes to us at the committee meeting, is to do planning to help establish a spectrum for home health aides in order to provide more training locally for these folks. Right now, they're having to travel out of the county in order to receive this training. And I believe it was BOCES that Lisa mentioned would perhaps be one of the sites that they would be trained in. The cost to the institutions that are sending these folks off of the training is apparently quite substantial, and Lisa was quite pleased to have received this grant. The reason that I wanted to highlight this particular one is in the governor's proposal, there's an item, and of course it's buried in that NYSAC write-up that we all received. There's an item in there regarding home health aides, and wanting to do away with perhaps the contracting agencies, the contracts that the county has with agencies, and in this case it would be, one of them would be Family and Children's Service, and drawing that all inside for us to be doing with our staff, which by the way is an impossibility. We'd have to hire probably 20 to 30 people in order to, that's my own estimate, by the way, after speaking with Alice, in order to pick up the slack and have these folks perform what the current home health aid contract performs. You can immediately do the numbers. I know that's one of the items we'll be talking about, I'm sure, Joe. But thought at least you ought to be aware that this is a particular item receiving this grant that ties into a couple of different places. In addition to that, there's a resolution that we're going to be coming to on the agenda a little, well, I guess it's not too much later, the appropriation from contingent fund that I'll talk about when that one arises. It was what some of us think is the last official meeting, we think, until the committee assignments are announced, of the Health and Human Services Committee for 2008 as it existed. And I think it's important to recognize that this is 2008 was a particularly exciting year for health and most of the agencies in this community that are providing support services. Some of them created AJITA for the various members of the community because of the budget cuts and the continual setbacks that we've all experienced during 2008. So while we're happy to see in some regard 2008 closed, it was a pleasure to work with all of the individuals, department heads and agency heads in particular, that were drawn together. I was out of the room for a moment and don't know if the Human Services Coalition meeting was mentioned that will take place tomorrow morning. It was mentioned.
Yes.
Thank you. That's the end of my report.
If there's no questions, could you move your Resolution G?
I will move Resolution G, appropriation from contingent fund for alternatives venture fund.
Seconded by Martha. Are there comments?
Can I make a comment or two before you open it up for questions?
Sure.
This is the money that helps individuals and with their income taxes. And you can see by the expansion, there's three areas that they're expanding into, which is kind of nice. They did lose some of the funding from at least two sources. We were speculating as to which two they were, but I think based on what Carol and I were talking about, it seems that one of them was a municipal, perhaps the federal source had cut back. Patricia Carey did mention to us, though, and we'd like to give her alternatives a little bit of leeway on this with county administration. Patricia Carey thinks that there may be a way for us, if we work this grant through her department, perhaps to expand some of the reach that this thing will have. And I'll leave the discussion up to you and up to Joe and Patricia, but the committee was quite favorable to that. At any rate, that's the explanation.
Any comments before we vote? Dooley Kiefer?
I have questions because I'm not on the relevant committees, budget or health, so I didn't hear any discussion, and I wondered if you knew how much the program as a whole cost last year. Neighborhood of
$65,000
is what I...
Maybe Carl could answer that.
Thank you, Nate. Go ahead.
2 points. The grants that were... I'm sorry. My name is Carl Graham. I'm the Director of Community Relations and Development for the Credit Union. The grants that fell through were two. One from the IRS. This was the first year that they had a grant program in support of VITA, Volunteer Income Tax Assistance. They had $6 million. There were literally hundreds of sites across the country. We had applied with a coalition of credit unions across New York State for our portion was $40,000. We received $7,500. Another grant was for $15,000, and we did not receive that. We were told that they wanted to fund new sites, and we had been previously funded. So those were two major grants. The budget for the program is in the neighborhood of $60,000 to $65,000, yes.
That was last year?
And, I'm sorry.
Last year, but if you're expanding, presumably it will cost more this year, or is that a false assumption?
It is a false assumption in that the program is mainly volunteer-driven. We have the same number of paid staff for the program. The incidental expenses, copying, transportation, not really that large an impact.
And Frank, you probably know how much we contributed in the past, if any.
I honestly, Nathan, yeah. This went through the budget committee first, I think.
Yeah, we had discussed it. I mean, Carl, it was $10,000 that you had requested the previous
That's correct.
You did not apply for funding to the the county.
That's correct. It was not our intention, based on the grant applications that we felt strongly that we were going to receive. So we did not request the funds through normal channels for this year.
Have we contributed in the past at all?
Yes. Last year, $10,000. Yeah.
I just didn't hear. Thank you.
Further questions before we vote? Nathan?
Yes. I just wanted to mention very quickly that related to this, the Budget Committee in the last budget meeting, we talked about how for these types of requests, contingent fund requests in the future, if an agency has, this is something that we want to change the fiscal policy on, is that if an agency falls within the purview or works with the Human Services Coalition, that they go through a review by the Human Services Coalition first before coming to the legislature, instead of coming straight to the legislature. Or if an agency isn't under the purview of the Human Services Coalition, that administration looks at it first before recommending it towards the Budget Committee, because there is a concern that without that type of policy in place, these requests can come to any legislator and they can pop up at any time. I think this is a special request due to the urgency. They'll need this funding in order to prepare for tax season, which is now. But in the future, this is something that we plan on taking up in the Budget Committee. If I continue to be chair, but I think whoever's on it, I think that it's going to it's something that we might want to do as one of our goals.
This will be a roll call. I will not be supporting this resolution for that very reason, that the policy is unclear as to will the county be the funder first resort for these kinds of emergencies in the community. We had other emergencies that have come to us mid-year, and it's a complex question, so I'm not going to be supporting it at this time. We have other people we want to speak before we vote. Martha, Frank, then Carol.
I have material from a previous discussion. I understand it's more than $32 into the community for every dollar spent on this program. And this is tax, so the public understands. Your program, Carl, helps people who otherwise would probably not apply, even fill out a tax return because they don't have to pay taxes, but that means they fail to get their earned income tax credit back. So that's many of the people that you serve. These are, as you said, mostly, almost entirely volunteer run. You're opening up sites in the town hall in Dryden.
In Dryden. The food pantry in Brooktondale and Appel Commons at Cornell University. We also have a site at Catholic Charities, but we don't advertise it because that's for their clients.
Okay. And so I think this is, and there was one example given at, maybe it was Budget Committee, that showed that one woman, a sort of typical single mother, and sort of by helping her do the forms correctly, she got back $10,000 she would otherwise not get back, which is the amount of this whole allocation here. I think it's really money very well spent. And just for, as Jim says, the 11 people watching this show, have you started these Saturday sessions yet, or is it going to be later in the year? Does it start in February?
The program itself started this past Saturday. The I shall have to look it up. Excuse me. We'll be starting Cornell January 26th, Dryden January 31st, and Brooktondale February 2nd.
Thank you, Carl.
Frank Proto, then Carol.
Carl, thanks again. But I wanted to just remind the board that Carl came before us during the budget season, and we had a discussion about this very program. Earl, I can't tell you precisely what meeting it was at without reviewing the minutes, but this isn't the first time we've seen this. So I'm glad that it's going through. I'm sure Carl is too. But I just, in defense of this was not a last-minute request of any, by any stretch of the imagination. I think we were prepped for this before the beginning of the year. Thank you,
Carol.
Yeah, I want to comment on the 11 people who watch this show. I get comments all the time from people who are watching this show that there are clearly more than 11 people who watch
the show.
You're
Q rating.
We should not. We are more interested, especially these days, than we give ourselves credit for being. And there are. I'm always amazed at the number of people who are interested enough to watch our government at work. And so I do get those comments. Government imposes taxes, and it is intimidating for even the most sort of number savvy among us to fill out those forms. There was an eloquent sort of half-hour-long presentation about the ways in which this program benefits our community, both the people who benefit by coming to it individually and our community collectively. That there are elements to the tax law, to the U.S. tax law, that if you don't know to file, you don't know that you are owed money back. And it seems to me that this is worth doing. I also just want to comment on the many people I know who have been volunteers in this program, who talk about what they've gotten by being volunteers in this program. So I think this is worth doing, and that we ought to do it.
Are we ready to vote?
Yep.
All in favor of Resolution G? It's a roll call vote. Excuse me.
Mr. Randall?
Yes.
Mr. Proto?
Yes.
Does anyone wish to be recorded as a no?
I will.
That passes. Move on to report from Facility and Infrastructure Committee. I believe Dooley is going to give the report, but Tyke may move the resolution because we don't have the chair or vice chair here.
Yes, I'll try. The Facilities and Infrastructure Committee met on December 15th. It was a foreshortened meeting so that members could attend the special legislative meeting that same afternoon. And although solid waste staff were there to fill us in on recycling guidelines and how they attempt to solve problems, because the meeting was shortened and Mr. Stevenson did not attend for that reason, the subject will be on a future agenda again for a more detailed discussion. We learned that a hangar at the airport that belonged to the Ithaca Hangar Association is now our obligation to purchase because apparently the initial agreement that we had with this association said that when the time came we would buy the hangar. The fee that we learned, the price that we learned about, was it will cost us $200,000. The hangar will then be rented to the same tenants, I believe, so maybe that's okay, but I wondered if Mr. Wood would like to expand on how we came to be in this situation.
Historically, obviously, I wasn't here 20 years ago. But what would seem like not a very good deal for us today apparently was thought to be a good deal back then. Apparently, from a historical perspective, the airport was interested in building hangars at that time, that there was no county money to do it. So they made an arrangement that the private company would build the hangar, and then after 20 years, the county would buy it from them. That association has been around for many years with really no purpose other than to own the hangar for 20 years, waiting for those 20 years to end so the county would buy the hangar from it, which we were clearly legally obligated to do, having agreed to do that. We did buy that hangar from them, and now the people, many of whom are sons or daughters or grandchildren of the original members of the organization, now rent purely as individuals, and we have individual agreements with each of the people, but the county definitely agreed 20 years ago to buy the hangar from.
And the $200,000 is not based on a historical price, it's from something more recent?
The $200,000, right, it was based on the value of the hangar. There was an appraisal. we actually thought they actually did the appraisal, and then we, you know, and our group looked over the appraisal and actually thought it was a pretty reasonable appraisal, and that it would be more costly for us to go out and get another appraisal and then argue it, because the appraisal did seem to be well within what it should be.
Thank you.
Pam, then Nathan.
I have not finished the committee report, but
I have a question on this.
Question for John
on this.
Jonathan, have we been collecting, has the county been collecting the rents for the last 20 years, and have we been paying for the maintenance of that hangar for the last 20 years?
We did collect rents. The maintenance, I think, was somewhat mixed. There wasn't a lot of maintenance, and in fact, in looking at it, we realized, you know, when we came to look at it, not me personally, but that there were some neglected maintenance which should be done. But essentially, we've been collecting rents for the 20-year period from the organization. Now we're collecting rents from 12 individual hangar owners.
Ed, do you want to speak to that quickly?
Just to clarify one point. The rent they were paying was a ground rent. They owned the building. They paid us a lease on the land that it occupied. Now they're paying a hangar rent. So it is different. They're paying a lot more rent now than they did previously. And so that's why our net return from renting the hangars is actually over, depending on what period of time you pay off the cost of the hangars over, could actually be more than what we were receiving in ground rent. But they were responsible for maintenance of the building. So we figured all of, Bob Nicholas looked at all of this very carefully with Jonathan, with David. The net cost to us, net revenue to us should be actually higher under this arrangement than it was with just getting the ground rent.
I think just to add on that, and maybe I'm wrong, but I think we figured it would take about 7 years to break even, and then we'd be making more. So overall, it may be a good financial arrangement for the county. But it was legal, what we were legally required to do.
Dooley is still trying to make a report. Is it, anyone have comments on that part of her report before she moves back to it? Nathan, Martha, then Jim.
We talked about this in budget committee, and I know that some of our committee members were concerned that this was not brought up during the actual budget season. And I believe that, Ed or Jonathan or David, you can answer this for me. But, this was discussed in, you guys found out about this in, what, October or September or something? I'm sorry that I was not at Air Service Board meetings during that time, because we had scheduled our budget meetings at that time. So I take some responsibility for not informing the legislature about that. I did not know about it until we had our budget meeting last week. So I'm sorry that we weren't able to incorporate that into our decision making during the budget process during the fall. And I believe that this money, that's contingent fund money from 2008, but not from 2009.
Martha, then Jim.
When we have had swaps on roads, when we swap a road with a different municipality, we tend to have to bring it up to. We have, tend to have to repair it before they'll accept it, and vice versa. And so to say now that we just paid $200,000 for a building that has, from some previous period, had neglected maintenance is a little disturbing. Is there,
given its condition, which Bob and the staff inspected, as part of determining whether the appraisal was right or not, they accounted for the condition. It's perfectly usable. They went to the next day to using it and to paying higher rents. So it wasn't any impacts which had any financial impacts.
But we just bought a liability. In other words, I think the summary of this, of what you're hearing now, is a little concern that we're hearing about it way at the end of this process, and even if this was something we had no choice about, it is the sort of thing we like to hear about as it's becoming something the staff has to deal with, not way at the end of the process.
Jim Dennis.
Thank you, Mike. Martha, all the committee members expressed exactly that question that you were just talking about. Frank, I have a question for you. You were here 24 years ago when they cut this deal. Can they give it? Can you, I mean, seriously, can you give me any insight?
Ask me anything, Jim.
What? I'm sorry?
Ask me anything.
Is there any, I mean, what kind of, can you remember the discussion? How did we get involved in something like this?
We were responsible for acquiring it. My recollection is part of it was because at the time we were looking at constructing a new terminal.
Right. Okay.
And we didn't know quite where we were going to put it. The original site for the terminal, I was chairman of the committee, the Airport Development Committee, and was responsible for the new terminal. We were looking at the site to the right of the CFR building, and we began to move closer, and it involved some of the hangar area. We even looked at the East Hill Flying Club area, and we looked at the area that Teganic Aviation was occupying. Eventually, as you know, we took over what at that time was the grass strip. We had a grass landing strip at that time, and it's where the new terminal is, and it ran north-south. But my recollection is that was why we were involved with any of the deliberations. And as Jonathan said, at the time, it seemed like a pretty good deal. We had an opportunity to control our own property, and that was part of the thinking. That's my recollection.
Thank you.
If I can add one thing, I'm in defense of the staff. The first I heard of it was basically when we got the letter from the tenants saying, "Okay, we want our money for the hangar." But in fairness to the airport staff, I think maybe they did not anticipate that's what the tenants would want to do.
Back to Julie's report.
Well, I'm sorry that this took so long, but at F&I, the questions, there was no one there able to answer all the questions, so I thought this was a reasonable thing, and I thought everyone would be interested. F&I members who were at that meeting were also very concerned that we hadn't heard a word about this before, so it's pretty unanimous. At that January 15th meeting, we also authorized construction bids being sought on Warren Road project. And lastly, we authorized that bids be sought on the 55 Brown Road building reconstruction project. And that's the resolution that Dwayne will handle. So that's the end of my report.
One quick question to move on to the resolution from Tyke. Frank?
The question may be quick, but the answer may not. Dewey, Bill Sesney had a legal ad in the paper a week or so ago regarding heavy truck traffic traveling over our county roads and restricting it. First, can you say anything about what precipitated it, or maybe any member of the committee, or maybe Ed can? Secondly, I wanted to let you know that perhaps this is restricting travel on county roads, and it was due to the size of the vehicles, and it seemed like it was aimed at Pam's favorite topic, the garbage trucks. We have not seen trash trucks in the volume on Route 79 as we had before, and it's because they're bypassing from Tioga County. They're taking the back roads coming through Brooktondale and tying in on county roads. And it's because the state has established a stop, if you will, the troopers have, just as you come into Tompkins County. I don't know if Sesney's article or notice was in concert with that, but just to is there any, do you have any information on what precipitated him setting up that notice when he did?
I don't, but I hope Mr. Marks does.
I see Ed making a note, and he'll maybe get back to us.
Okay.
Ready for vote, Tyke, on moving the Resolution H?
Yeah, I'd like to move Resolution H, award of bid, Tompkins County Health Department Building Renovation Capital Project.
Carol Chalk seconds. Is there discussion? This is the revised version. Tyke?
I move it. I wasn't able to get to the F&I meeting, but I was at the Health Department Building Committee meeting when this was recommended. I do so with some reservation, and I say that because primarily because of the electrical contract. There was a difference between the first bidder and the second bidder of 10% or more, and I'm a firm believer in a better value bid at times. The second bidder was a local bidder, Richardson Brothers. Now I certainly would strongly urge or hope that more local companies bid on these things, and it's too bad when they don't get the bids. And the reservations come in the fact that, number one, because it was so much lower, there was concerns. I think Ralph initially was concerned as well with some of the details. They actually had asked to withdraw their bid at one point via phone. I guess everything had gotten worked out. That's why it ended up being back on the agenda. But with that said, I just have reservations, but I also have strong belief in Arel's management of and oversight of this project in making sure that we get what we're paying for this.
Further discussion before we vote? I don't think I wrote down hands before, so I'll go Frank, Martha, Dooley.
Tyke, a couple of questions. First, are any of these contractors going to be hiring local workers?
It was my belief from the committee meeting that is there two that are union shops? Three. There was one or two that were going to, and that thanks for bringing that up because that was another part of my argument. I'd asked that. Concord at least try to employ some of the local union workers in this because it's a county project, but probably Arel or Ed can answer that question better.
Well, the reason I'm asking is that all four of these are from none of them are from, none of them
right,
are
two
local.
Two from Binghamton, one from Elmira, and one from Rochester. Three of the four are union contractors. That's not a requirement to bid public work, but the requirement was that they have to have an apprenticeship training program. And so all of them, including the open shop, do have apprenticeship training programs. Picquilly, Slavic, and Vincent out of Binghamton is open shop, but they do have an apprenticeship program that is approved by the New York State Department of Labor. Yes, and also in researching and investigating each of the contractors, two of them indicated that they would be using the local unions here, the Electrical Concord, would be using local labor, I think, as well as the general work contractor.
Okay, I want to keep going. I've got a couple of more. Arel, can you stay up there just a second?
Sure.
How many more pieces are there yet to bid? I mean, I realize the parking area is not, the roadways are not, but can you, off the top of your head?
Sure. We've done the deconstruction. That was actually completed at a schedule. Last week we did the punch list, so that was completed about a month ahead of schedule. That's why we're bringing it to the legislature at this meeting. It was originally scheduled to come at your first meeting in February, but we're looking at awarding it sooner because contractors are ready to move forward. This is phase two, which is the reconstruction of the building. The next phase would be the site reconstruction, which includes sidewalks, curbing, and a parking lot. We wanted to wait until these bids came in to see how much money was left over in our budget. These bids, the total bids, came in about $500,000 under our estimate, which included both. We had an escalation factor in there as well, so they came in lower than what was estimated for the project.
Do you recollect what the deconstruction approximately cost?
Deconstruction is $324,500.
I'm sorry.
$324,500, and we had a 5% contingency, which we didn't use for this project, of $16,000-something, which will now go to contingency for the...
And we have the site work yet to do. The reason I'm asking, Mr. Chairman, if the original numbers are somewhat still holding, we were buying this building for somewhere between $3.5 and $4.5 million, as I recall.
Three million
just
even. $3 million.
Three and four is seven, and three for the deconstruction is ten. We're closing in on the $11.5 million estimate that it would have cost us to put a new building up. No, Ed?
Yeah, it's
just want to keep track.
No, we're currently on budget for the stay with potentially stay within the original estimate, depending on what site work the legislature authorizes. We'll be coming back probably with a couple of options on site work, and that is still to be determined to some degree. But the construction bids and the deconstruction bids are all within the original estimates. Purchase of the building came in at the original estimate. So right now, the only thing that might be considered to be out of line with the budget could be the site improvement work that needs to be done.
Ed, what was the original budget of? Do you recollect?
About $8.2 million, and I think we're still on that. That's after assuming we get revenue to offset from sale of the Biggs property. That was the way the project was put together. So it would be $8.2 million after the sale of the Biggs property for an estimate we put into the original capital project. So right now, we have money to do site work. We don't know whether that will do all the work you may decide you want to do once that's presented to you. But the construction bids and the deconstruction are in line with what we had estimated. In fact, surprisingly so in this environment that we're in these days. So.
Did the $8 million include the purchase of the building?
Yes.
Yes.
Well, yeah, because we have basically, it was $3 million for the building. The bids you're awarding today, the consultant contract, and the deconstruction, that's it. And that adds up to approximately that estimate, less a little bit for the site work.
We move on to Martha, then Dooley, then Carol, then Jim.
I'm sorry, how much was the deconstruction?
$324,500.
Okay. Appreciate all the budget numbers, and, you know, this is an important project. This is the only time we're hearing about this, so the time is important to put in on this. Ed, you mentioned the solar panels. How much would that add to the budget?
Yeah, we presented to the committee, gosh, it's been probably in November. There were three options. We had one option, which was my preferred, but we didn't really get a vote at committee. One option is roof-mounted solar panels, similar to what we have at the library, although these would be inclined, a slight incline to get a better generation. That was about $400,000 to $500,000. Then there was an option to have raised panels on the roof, so which are probably about this high, with a higher incline on them. But that would have less panels on the roof because you have to have separation, so you're not getting shading from the array adjacent to it. That was not preferred, so I don't even remember the price for that one. The other price was for ground-mounted panels, which would be raised probably about 3 feet high in an incline, and that was about $1.2 million. These we have not discussed with Cornell. We have a ground lease, so we would have to first propose that to Cornell because it's they have to prove anything that might have an impact on the site.
Well, we have mentioned it to them as a possibility. The thing here is that the solar panels, if they were to be proposed, would be a standalone project that would pay for itself and reduce energy costs. We would not bring it forward unless the bottom line was that, well, we'd bring it forward, but we would expect that the bottom line after, you know, grants we can get for that from NYSERDA, other aid that might be available, would be that, that those would pay for themselves over their life, less than their life, but over a reasonable period for bonding for them with reduced energy costs. So that wouldn't be part of, that was never factored into the original estimate for this building, and it would be a standalone component that would be dealt with and financed separately if we, if you decided to go forward with it.
But if they're on, especially if they're on the roof, well, even if they're on the ground, considering electrical connections, wouldn't it be better to actually do the work at the same time?
No, well, no. Our consultant said that the building will be able to accept the solar panels if we decide to do it the way it's being built in the electrical system. So there's no need to do it at the same time. It can be done after or as a later phase in conjunction with a later phase of the work on the building. Okay. And it'll be fine. And we expect to bring that forward within the next several months, probably in conjunction with the discussion of the site work, to decide what the legislature wants to do with that.
Thank you.
Dooley, then Carol, then Jim.
I was going to contribute mostly what Arel had said, because at the committee we got good information about the unions and the apprentice program. So I don't have any other comments.
Mm-hmm. Carol?
Yeah, I just wanted to confirm with Arel my understanding of what I heard at committee in the Labella presentation, that all four of these contractors had agreed to pay prevailing wages, and that all four would provide apprenticeship opportunities, and that all four would be making, hiring local labor, although that wasn't specified, the percentage for each of them.
Right. Prevailing wage is a requirement, whether union or non-union. That occupies probably a quarter inch of our bid documents. So that is a requirement, and they have to actually sign off when they submit their bids that they are doing so. We don't enforce that. I mean, that the State Labor Department has to enforce that that is happening. The contractors are required, although, to submit with every payment application, which is once a month, certified payrolls that we hold and that the state can audit us and the contractor make sure that those are being submitted. Also, union labor, yes, I think at least two of them did cite that they would be using local unions for the project, and supervision would be from their from Rochester, Binghamton, depending on which contractor we're talking about. What was the last one? The last point?
Hiring local labor.
Yeah.
As they presented each of the four, I heard that each of the four would be hiring at least some local labor.
Yes.
Thank you, Carol. Thank you, Arel. Jim Dennis?
Carol, let me quickly answer. They're hiring now the local halls for all the people on this project, whether they're union contractors or not. That's where they're going to go first. What I've learned from all this is I've been on this committee in Tyke and Dooley, that it's pretty clear to me all the information I've heard today we've heard about in the committee, and we need in the future to at least give a report. If it's a huge project like this, it should come out under F&I or from one member of the committee. So if I'm on a committee like this in the future, I will make sure that you get the same kind of information I do. Let me just say the staff and Kevin Labelle, they've done a great job with this to bring this in at the number that we were looking at.
Mike Sigler, then Dooley.
Mine will be quick. Since you're here, I better ask. My concern with the prevailing wage was kind of like what's going on with the city. So I don't know if some of the questions come from that, with the whole parking garage, they didn't do the bid to prevailing wage or something like that, and now it's going to cost them an extra $250,000 or something like that. So you were saying that's moderated by the state? Or do we take care of
it? No. We don't enforce that. Okay. When we put in our bid documents when it went out to bid that they have to pay prevailing wages and they have a prevailing wage schedule.
Okay.
And so when they submit their bid, they have to agree that they will be paying prevailing wages. But with their submittals for payment each month, they have to submit a certified payroll documents. Now, we don't review those. We hold those, but those are documents that the state can audit at any point, the contractor, And if not, I mean, it's the contractor's responsibility to make sure that those wages are paid.
Okay.
All we're asking is you realize that you have to pay prevailing wages. They say, yes, we will pay prevailing wages. They have the schedule so they know what those wage rates are. And we've never had any problem with that.
I mean, no, I wasn't suggesting you did.
Yeah, I guess if you had included a requirement that they pay prevailing wages, that could happen, but we always include prevailing wage requirements in our capital projects.
Dooley has a comment, and I'd like to proceed to a vote.
Yes, I, listening to Ed speak, I was reminded about the deconstruction contract. We had expected that to meet the goal of 75% of the materials being recycled, reused, and at the last hospital construction committee meeting, we were told that it's looking like 95% will have been recycled, and that means reused, and that means that we would get one more lead point. But that's really, really good news. I'm glad we made that effort. And with respect to reporting to the legislature, the Health Department Building Construction Committee hasn't met that regularly, and when there has been information, it has been reported to F&I, and only if something seems important enough does it become part of the F&I chair's report to this organization. So I think you're getting the news about as quickly as the committee F&I gets it.
I hear you. Are we ready to vote on revised Resolution H?
May we have a roll call, please?
Mr. Randall?
Yes.
Ms. Robertson?
Yes.
Mr. Shinagawa?
Yes.
Mr. Sigler?
Yes.
Mr. Stevenson?
Yes.
Mr. Burbank?
Yes.
Ms. Chalk?
Yes.
Mr. Dennis?
Yes.
Mr. Hattery?
Yes.
Ms. Keeper?
Yes.
Ms. Fantasy?
Yes.
Mr. Proto?
No.
Mr. Klinkelaer?
Yes.
12 ayes, 1 no.
Thank you, Dooley. Thank you, Tyke. We're going to move on to the regular reports from committees. We'll start with Greg Stevenson, Public Safety Committee Chair.
The committee last met prior to this meeting to move an appointment that you've already seen. That was the only order of business. The next meeting of this committee will be in February 2009. That concludes my report.
Thank you. Is there anyone here who would wish to report on the Workforce Diversity and Inclusion Committee, since Lesen's not here? If not, Martha? Martha?
I was at their December meeting. They talked about the goals for the coming year, and they talked about ideas for spending the budget that they're that they have under their control. And I believe some materials were going to be prepared for the next meeting, and they were looking forward to working with administration on hiring a project assistant. So,
okay. Thank you. If there's no questions on that, we'll move on to Human Resource Committee. Jim Dennis, Chair.
Thank you, Michael. We've had one negotiating session with the white, at least one with the white collar. We are still discussing things with them. We will be back to the table with them soon. We just had a second meeting today with the corrections officers and exchanged some proposals, and we will be back to the table with them in February and March. We have schedules. And that concludes my report.
Thank you. If there's no questions, we'll move on to Government Operations Committee. Mike Hattery, Chair.
The committee last met tonight before this committee before the legislature meeting. Passed a number of items that were under consent agenda, with the exception of one that was pulled by Legislator Proto, Resolution D, which is my understanding is an annual resolution regarding the amount of annual expense that's certified for the clerk's office to administer the mortgage tax. And I so move. With one minor change to the resolution as you have it, under resolved, the fourth line down, at the end of the line it says, to assist in the administration of the mortgage recording tax law, we struck law.
Okay, with that change, it's been moved. Is there a second? Pam Mackesy seconds. Is there any deliberation before we vote?
Is that resolution D?
Yes.
Yes.
I had a couple of questions. Thanks, Mike.
Frank Proto?
Mike, the questions I had was, is this going to, well, bear with me. When will this be effective? Immediately?
David?
This is an annual process that the clerk has to, in order to, they submit a filing with the state on the retention of the, because this is state money, the mortgage tax is state, and it's distributed to the state and to the municipalities. The clerk files an affidavit on the expenses, and they can deduct from the gross proceeds the administration. So this is the annual filing of that information.
Okay. So does this, the way I read this, David, it indicates that the State Tax Commission agrees with the Aurora's evaluation that the expenses are justified.
It has to be approved by the legislature, correct.
Right. And since there's no effect on our budget whatsoever, because this is state money,
well, the collection expense, Aurora takes, so part of it supports the county clerk's operation, you know, defrays the cost. $15,000 also goes to the finance department. That's part of that certification.
You?
Yes. So it does affect, it does a small amount of the, you know, it's about $1 million. Let's say it's $1.4 million a year that comes, that the mortgage tax generates in the two semi-annual payments. And the county retains a very small amount of that for administration.
With the reason I'm asking is this is generated by activity in the mortgage area. Is there any anticipation that with what's going on economically in the country and certainly in the area, things have not, the bottom hasn't dropped out, in thank goodness, in our county, but have things have slowed down somewhat. Are we still projecting?
Well, the way it works is it's a dollar amount. So it's got an inverse relationship. The lower the mortgage tax activity, the higher the percentage ultimately that's taken off for administration, because it's a dollar amount versus, but it's established annually.
Just want to make sure that we're assuring the public that this is not a cost to the county. It may be run through, we may be fronting the money, but it sounds like some of it may be reimbursed for expenses that we've incurred, but it's coming out of the pot that is generated by this tax. Okay, thank you. Thanks, Mike.
With that clarification, are we ready to vote on Resolution D that was pulled off consent with a very minor wording change of the word law coming out of the first resolve? All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? That's unanimous. Thank you. I'm going to take a break after 2 hours. I'm getting a sense in the room to proceed, so I will proceed unless someone asks for a break. Planning Development Environmental Quality Committee, Martha Robertson, Chair.
Thank you. We met on January 8th, and spent some time talking. Julie brought a couple of suggestions to us about the membership of the Program Oversight Committee that will administer the housing program with Cornell in the city. We talked quite a bit about that and agreed to bring the comments to a meeting we had last week with the city. The city and the county are have been talking about sort of the details of the wording and the fine points of the MOU. That meeting included Joe, Carol, myself, Ed, Jean Lassesse. Did I miss anybody from the county? This was the first time that together we were looking at the comments and the suggestions made by Cornell to the county and the city. We'd had them for some time, but the city hadn't developed its response yet. So we together decided that we needed to work through some of the language. And so that's why you haven't seen this as the housing MOU come before you to vote on tonight. We made a big deal of in December about we're going to vote on it in January, and then we had a presentation expecting to vote tonight. It's not ripe yet, but duly the changes that you suggested were easily accepted by, you know, incorporated into the things that we're going to look at. So my understanding is that staff is working on it, and then it'll come back to us. I do think there may be one or two things that are substantive enough that they may have to come back to the committee before coming to the full legislature.
Tui Keeper.
Will there be a copy of the revised draft available for the legislative office?
Sure, and yeah, we can. Yeah, absolutely. Thank you. I haven't gotten that yet. We heard from Jean Lassesse about the adjustments that she described tonight in the homeownership program, and we passed the resolution on civic facilities legislation that was on the consent agenda tonight. Most of the meeting, or a good chunk of the meeting, was spent on the what's known as the Hattery proposal on room tax money for economic development. The STPB had made a formal consideration of the proposal and issued a statement to us that they, let's see, the word was vehemently opposed this proposal. And we had comments from a room full of people on that. I won't go through it, but I am pleased to see that the it looks like the Budget Committee has an hour for that agenda item on Monday, so you may hear most of what we heard. But I think one comment that I would like to mention is Regina McPheeters, chair of the Chamber of Commerce, spoke of her own support of economic development through TCAD as well as the tourism program, and her kind of discomfort with the fact that it feels like these two programs are sort of being put in opposition to each other. And she thinks the core issue, and appreciates Mike Hattery's bringing this up, but the core issue is the difficulty for long-term sustainability of TCAD because it's threatened by loss of civic facilities bonding income. So she felt that that was the real issue, is how does the county support TCAD long-term? And I think that is an important topic to discuss whatever happens with this particular proposal. And so I would just, that's just a quick summary of the meeting.
That's in the report. Carol?
Yeah, can I add something, if you mind?
No, okay.
It was very interesting because it was a room full of people who came to us, first of all, with a message, each of them, about the state cuts that they are subject to, some of which were really surprising and striking, you know, $129,000 here for one group and $80,000 for another group, and came to us and said, look, we are groups who kind of go at each other and are in competition for these dollars much of the time. And we are now all subject to cuts. We're coming to you with a unified message. Don't make that harder for us. Don't have the net result of this be that we're going at each other, whether it be TCAD and the chamber or the various other constituents who are and stakeholders who are represented there. So I don't know if they'll be able to amass quite the group that they had at our meeting. I know that at least one of those people is out of the country now. So
it just... But I do encourage those of you who didn't hear this already in one committee to, if you have the time in your schedule, to come to the budget committee where this will come up again, to hear it firsthand.
Martha?
Yeah, I agree. That would help people who are trying to make this decision so that we don't have the full presentation at this level here. I just want to say that it was the last meeting of our committee for the year, and I want to thank Kathy for doing a great job on the minutes, and Kathy Woolsey for the agenda, and the rest of the staff, and obviously the committee members for, I think, a good year's work. So, thanks.
Thanks, Martha. If no further questions, Nathan Shinagawa, Chair of Budget and Capital Committee.
Thank you, Mike. At our last Budget and Capital Committee meeting, we talked at length about the airport issue that we also talked at length here about. We also talked a little bit, we voted on the resolution for tax assistance program, had a discussion about that as well, in which we talked about looking at a possible goal for the Budget Committee to be looking into that fiscal policy that I had mentioned about Human Services Coalition administration review prior to going to the Budget Committee. In addition to that, we also passed our the housing resolution, and I hear from Martha that will probably come to the legislature soon once other things are worked out. At our next Budget and Capital Committee meeting, we're going to be discussing, as Martha has said, and I'm not going to repeat everything that she just said, but we will take action on, on Mike Hattery's resolution on the hotel room occupancy state tax law amendment. And personally, just to put it out there, as budget chair, I'm very supportive of this measure. I think that while I support the work that the STB does and the things that it supports, this is a critical time in which we need to invest in economic development. And already we're stretched thin in terms of property taxes, sales tax, and other fees that we can possibly levy. And I think that this is one of the few sources of revenue that we can to invest in something that's so vitally important as economic development. However, also with that said, I think that economic development can be defined as many things, and I think that it will be the labor of the committee to actually look at what that will be and be specific about it. Because I think if we're specific about it, people won't feel that there will be this slippery slope that they've been talking about. Other than that, we're going to be discussing other resolutions, but I'll just report that at the next legislature meeting after we take action. Thank you.
Thank you. Those who want to follow the issue, certainly attend that meeting or read the minutes of PDEQ. Any questions on committee reports? Frank Proto?
Nathan, I wanted to ask if perhaps you could initiate with facilities a request from the contingent fund in order to replace this light bulb.
God, I didn't even realize it. Yeah, I was wondering why you didn't look as bright and, radiant as usual. But now that explains everything, right?
Can you look into that? Or?
Yeah.
Pass it down the front.
Oh, the rail's out of the room, but yeah.
Are there any motions from anyone else in the body? Duly keep.
Yeah, I'll renew my motion to reconsider and vote for the legislative chair.
Is there a second?
Point of order.
Yeah, I'll second.
Thank you.
Point second. Of order, I don't think you can. I don't think you can recall this.
We will ask our parliamentarian about whether it's appropriate to be able to reconsider an election.
Okay. As you recall, the last time this came up, I offered the opinion that you cannot, because it says in Robert's rules that once an election is final, you cannot move to reconsider it. Whereas there's some debate about the vice chair position, I don't think there's much debate at all that the chair position is final. So in my opinion, you cannot reconsider it. Of course, you can suspend those rules, but you need a two-thirds majority of 10 votes here. That's my opinion.
Mr. Chair. I will rule with Jonathan's opinion. If someone wants to appeal the ruling of the chair, we'll take a vote on that matter.
I have a question for Jonathan. Point where it fits in the order.
If it's a point of order.
Okay.
Sure.
Did you also, though, Jonathan, fairly strongly advise us that what we did in this body was really solely up to this body?
Well, I think, you know, as Dooley said at the last meeting, the county attorney doesn't make any rulings. I just give opinions. And so it's entirely up to you whether you wish to accept that opinion or not. You know, I'm not making any ruling. I'm just giving you my opinion.
But to
add, I'm not sure if that's answered. But
to lead to a vote, I need to make a ruling so someone could appeal it or not. So I had just ruled on his opinion. If someone would like to appeal that, they're free to, and then we'll bring it to a vote of its body. Dooley Kiefer.
Pondering a challenge to your ruling, I am thankful that Jonathan recalls that there is another interpretation to this whole business of whether it's appropriate or not to reconsider what is deemed a final vote in an election before this legislature, because we are a charter county. We have taken from New York state law those portions that we think should apply to the county. We refer to Robert's Rules as a place we can go when we're silent on certain aspects, but there is nothing that requires us to go to Robert's Rules and follow them on elections. We could just as easily believe that our own rules say that reconsideration is possible on any motion. So I disagree with Jonathan's opinion. I disagree with your ruling. But I actually am really tired, and I think I will withdraw my motion.
Please stop.
Just as a reference to what Dooley spoke to, in our own rules of the legislature, on page 10, rule 12 speaks to rules of order. I'll just read it, referencing that, and I'll take other questions after this. In any matter of procedure not governed by these rules, the legislature shall be governed by Robert's Rules of Order.
Yes, and I think we are governed by our rules that were silent.
The motion's been withdrawn. Is there further business before this body? Martha Robertson.
Well, I'm sorry you withdrew it because I was going to move to table it until the meeting when all members are here, but I guess the point is we can't do that. All right. The point is I would like this to be brought up fresh, and however that gets done, I hope that the goodwill of this body could be perhaps resurrected if we could do that, and hope that we can find a meeting time soon when 15 can be present.
Okay. I'm going to move on to minutes of previous meetings. We're going to move in two different batches of minutes because...
Mike, I'm sorry.
Yes, sir.
Are you planning on calling a special meeting?
Yes, if a date can be found before February 3rd, we will call a special meeting. I will try to do it with as much notice as possible. The requirement is 48 hours notice. The preference is almost a week's notice. We'll do so as best we can.
All right. Thank you.
Could you please clarify the purpose of the special meeting?
You mean when he sends it out?
The purpose of the special meeting will be the same purpose for the previous special meeting, except we will be taking up action expected. The previous special meeting was to revisit the...
Both?
The past meeting was to revisit the vice chair vote because that was in question.
No, this, it was listed as chair and vice chair.
Was it? Okay.
Yes.
So same title, and then action will be taken as opposed to just information about ways forward.
Because I don't care exactly how we get there and technically.
Yes.
But it just does seem that we owe it to our public to make clear exactly what our vote for both chair and vice chair are going to be. And so I just want to clarify that the purpose of this meeting is to revisit both the chair and the vice chair.
That is the intention.
Issue.
Mike Hatter.
Thank you.
I believe Legislator Sigler raised a point of order because we've had, you know, a previous ruling which was repeated by the chair that where our rules are silent, Robert's Rules of Order are the order that we refer, the meeting rules that we refer to. I don't know how many times we have to revisit this, but it's very clear to me that we have an elected chair that cannot be challenged at this point. And I really wish that we would cease and desist with that. I think it's uncertain about the vice chair, but the meeting minutes tapes verify that we have a clear vote on the chair without dispute, and it's not to be revisited based on our rules. Now, if we want to continue to try and change the rules, then I think we further jeopardize our credibility with the public, because that's what you're talking about, is changing the rules if you want to continue to revisit the vote on the chair.
There are ways to review the vote on chair. You can suspend the rules.
So, right.
I will accept a motion to approve the minutes of December 16th. Who would like to move those? Dooley Kiefer?
I'd like to move them with the proposed changes.
December 16th?
No, I'm sorry.
I'm going to move them separately. So December 16th is the first set.
Yes.
So Dooley moves them. Director Stevenson seconds. Are we ready to vote on December 16th minutes? All in favor? Are any opposed? That's unanimous. We have had submission of corrections to the minutes of January 6th. We can have someone move them and second them and then go through those corrections vote by vote. My understanding is that Jonathan has reviewed most of these proposed corrections. I don't know if you have an opinion on those, but it would be our body that would prevail section by section on the proposed changes to the minutes. Does people want to take this up tonight, or do they want time to review those proposed changes and take it up at our next meeting? Jim Dennis?
I would prefer to take it up the next meeting and review them and take it up the next meeting.
Okay.
Can I request that if Jonathan has reflections on them, that we get that before the next meeting? So that we
can
review that too?
I reviewed them. They're fine with me. There's no legal issue with them. I mean, if they're acceptable to the body, there's no legal issue with them.
So if I'm not hearing a motion to approve those minutes, we will then...
I'll move to approve them tonight with the changes. That's what I tried to do earlier.
Okay. Dooley moves to approve the minutes of January 6th with all the changes. Is there a second? Martha Robertson seconds. Is there discussion?
Move to table, Mr. Chairman.
Second.
Move to table is and seconded. Is non-debatable. Are you tabling to a specific date?
To June, the second meeting in June. Give us sufficient time to review them, and anyone else that has corrections or changes that are pertinent to themselves can add that joined in the discussion.
Are you specifically moving to the date, or are you just tabling indefinitely?
I'd like to table indefinitely until they have been appropriately reviewed by members of this body, and anyone else who wants to submit changes, proposed changes, has an opportunity to do that.
Motion to table that has been seconded is non-debatable. All in favor of tabling indefinitely, please raise your hand.
Without date.
11. Opposed to tabling? 1. I guess that means we had 12 in favor and 1 opposed.
Wait, so
we're
13.
We have 13.
You may not have counted 12.
Okay, your hand may have a conflict.
But
so.
Just and counted as a
wait a minute, are you voting afterwards? The vote's been announced.
Minutes of January 6th have been tabled indefinitely. Someone can lift them from the table.
Is there challenge the ruling of another legislature?
Is there a motion to go into a brief executive session for purposes of personnel? Jim moves, Nathan seconds. All in favor?
Aye.
Anyone opposed? We'll give a 5-minute break to break down the cameras, and we will be in executive session for a few moments. No action is expected.